I knew with absolute clarity what kind of relationship I wanted to have, very specific agreements and ways of relating that were going to be what I was willing to commit to.
Welcome to The Art of We, the podcast where we explore how committed partnerships can be potent vehicles for fully delivering our gifts to the world. Hi, I'm Krista Vanderveer, a seasoned consultant and executive coach.
And I'm Dr. Will Vanderveer, a leader and educator in integrative mental health and wellness. As husband and wife and business partners, we keep learning that the key to maximizing our authenticity and impact in the world lies inside the health, security, and depth of our relationship.
On this show, we'll pull back the curtains to share lessons, insights, and practices from our own marriage and professional careers that help us thrive. If you're a leader, founder, or overachiever, and you want to leverage your relationships for personal and collective growth, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the Art of We podcast. This is episode number 85. We're excited to get into the nuances of how each of us called in kind of relationship that we have now prior to meeting each other. It feels fun to investigate and kind of tear apart. Maybe that's not the right word, but it feels fun to investigate and look closely at how we were orienting towards a kind of partnership that neither of us had previously, but we knew we really wanted. And we both had our own unique processes. And so in this episode, I'm going to be interviewing Will about his process specifically. And in the next episode, I'll share my process, because they're both very unique and they're not out of your typical kind of dating advice book. Wouldn't you say that's true, Will?
Definitely. Hard to find unless we write a dating advice book maybe at some point in the future. But I think it's a unique journey, a unique set of messages that we want to share for sure.
And this is really for anybody who's either currently single and they're looking to call in their next relationship, or they're in a current partnership and they're wanting to up-level the kind of relationship that they're having with their partner. I'm sure that this would also be very useful.
I think that's a good lead-in, because between the two of us had both of those experiences. I was in a long-term relationship, and that was going on almost up until, you know, right before you and I met. And you had been single for a couple of years by the time we met, just over 2 years.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about you, Will. You ready to be interviewed by me about your process?
Sure.
Okay, great. As you mentioned, you were in a long-term relationship. It was about a 20-year marriage that you were in. And in an earlier episode, we actually talked about how you knew it was time to go, how it was time to leave. But we didn't really get into what happened once you realized that there was a different kind of partnership that you wanted. So maybe you can take us back to the kind of realization that you had, your own internal process, when you realized that you wanted something different that wasn't happening with your then wife.
Well, the first moment that I remember is waking up on my 40th birthday, and this was 7 years before I met you. So I was still very much in the marriage that you spoke of. And I was kind of struck by the sudden insight that for my 40th birthday, I wanted to give myself the kind of relationship that it took me until 7 years later to begin to create with you. So I wanted to share that context, because for some people, it may take a while, if you're like me, to not only map out what you want specifically, but also to be able to create what you want. And, you know, I came from the school of thought, which I still subscribe to, which is if you're in a relationship and it's not going the way you want it to go, then probably a better idea to put in the effort to see if you can update and remodel the relationship you're already in versus throwing it in the trash and going and finding another partner who you will then have to work hard to create the relationship that you want to have. So there were many years of refining and clarifying and updating the vision, and also working with my previous partner hard to see if we could create that together.
How would you describe that? What kind of relationship were you aware of, or at least the possibility of a type of relationship. How would you describe that back then?
So that morning of my 40th birthday, the way I was describing it to my then wife was I wanted to secure functioning partnership. In other words, at that time, what it meant to me was interdependency in a healthy sense. And the partnership that we had was based more on what I think of as more fundamental Buddhist principles of self-responsibility. And that took the form of, from my perspective, living in silos where each of us was individually responsible for our own emotional regulation, but we were not responsible for each other's emotional regulation.
And how did you know that you wanted that? Did you see role models who were modeling that? Did you just have like an internal compass that was like, I know this is possible, so I want to go out and try to find that? How did you have a sense that that was even on the map as an option?
Well, it was coming at me from various angles. For one thing, I was and still am really good friends with a couple of guys who seem to be able to create that with their wives. And, you know, they're still in my life today and their marriages are going strong and they're part of our inner circle. But it was also coming at me from my practice as a psychotherapist and psychiatrist, where I was seeing, I had begun to refer some of my clients who I was seeing individually to couples therapy. And I was watching the kind of updating going on in the local Boulder couple therapy community, where the work of Stan Takin and his mentors from UCLA were becoming more of a prevalent theme in the work that people were doing in the healing work. And specifically what I mean by that is I had been going to a couple therapist with my partner at that time, who put out a great book about Buddhism and psychotherapy and who was a prominent Buddhist in the community. And his work was all about self-responsibility and it wasn't about interpersonal, interactive, healthy interdependence. So anything that smacked of me being responsible for you, at best, it was described to me in couple sessions with him as neurotic feminine energy. That was the sort of high end of the description. And then the low end was just straight up codependency. So I had been standing for a more updated way of relating with my now ex-wife.
And how did you imagine that that would have changed your partnership if it was more interdependent, like at a very kind of tangible level, so that people who are like, I don't even know what that looks like to be interdependent in a partnership, or I have a sense of what that would look like, but I'm not quite sure. Was there like a feeling sense of what it would feel like together? Was there a real imagination how things would change?
I remember hearing about some of the profound healing work that was happening for my individual clients who were working with Stan Takin trained couple therapists in the community. And I remember specifically a couple of themes that were emerging in that work that was shared with me that I felt like represented what you're talking about. And it came up as in the moment of couples therapy, one person in a really deep place of suffering, let's say a shameful traumatic memory or something, regret or whatever the thing was, loss, grief. And the couple therapist saying to the one who wasn't in that pain, wasn't the one suffering, but was in the room for the couple therapy, hey, you need to take care of that person. I'm going to show you and teach you how to respond accurately to your partner in a terrible shame cycle or whatever the thing was. And hearing those vignettes or stories to me stood in stark contrast to what the couple therapist I was seeing was saying to me, which is some version of, hey, you need to go meditate more if you're in a place of suffering. Mm-hmm. You need to show up with a neutral or positive attitude toward your partner. And if you can't bring that, then you need to go back to the cushion. That's how I heard the messaging. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's what I was hearing. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it seems like it would feel more like you guys are more of a team. You have each other's backs. There's a sense of safety in the home, safety in the relationship. You know that you're going to be taken care of in the way that you need when there is suffering or challenge. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And now, so on your 40th birthday, you wake up and you're like, okay, I'm going to give myself this type of relationship. Did you have a sense, like in that, taking that stand in that moment and take out your previous partner, whether it happened with her or not, did you have a sense that that was actually meant for you? Like, you're like, I'm going to do this and it's going to happen. Or was it more like, I'm going to stand for this no matter what, whether or not it happens? Because eventually, obviously, the two of you ended up splitting. I would say primarily because you weren't able to get where you wanted to go. You couldn't create this kind of relationship you're talking about. So I'm curious, like, were you just like, whatever happens is whatever happens, but this is what I want and I'm going to go for it?
Yeah, I remember waking up with her next to me and saying to her, I hope this happens with you, but if it doesn't happen with you, I'm still going to create this in my life. This is what I'm committed to going forward. And it took me a long time to believe that I could achieve that in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have role models growing up that showed me that this is how you are with your spouse.
Right.
So for a long time, it felt like an idea or a concept. But after seeing the changes happening in my friends and relationships that were based on that, and also my clients that I mentioned earlier, seeing those changes really led me to develop the confidence that such relationships were real. They weren't fantasies. And it was more like, I don't care if I can't get there. I care about being on the path. If I'm on the path to creating that, then I know I'm being true to myself. And it's okay if I can't get there, but I need to be on that path for the rest of my life.
Amazing. Yeah, that feels really potent to hear. And I think a really essential part of what we're talking about when we're supporting people in like the non-traditional dating advice. So I'm so glad that you brought that in. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I want us to explore that gap of 7 years between... Obviously, we're not going to take 7 years to explore it, but between taking that stand and claiming that for yourself and the moment that we got together and ended up creating it together. So we'll be right back and we'll hear more of the details about how Will did that. We hope you're enjoying this episode. I want to take a quick break to let you know about a gift we created for you and your partner. We compiled our top 10 relationship agreements. Agreements that have been so powerful in supporting the success of our partnership that we even turned them into our wedding vows. These agreements help us stay connected, growing, and thriving as a couple, and they've been critical to help us create a kind of we that's way beyond what we've ever experienced before. You can download this free gift at KristaVanderveer.com. That's KristaVanderveer.com. Also, if you enjoy our podcast, it would be so meaningful to us if you left us a rating and review. Not only does it help others find us, but it gives us critical feedback on how we're doing. Thanks in advance, and now back to the episode. Okay, welcome back. We are talking about Will and his journey of calling in the type of relationship that we now have. And I have a question for you about fear of loss. So I really hear that you were taking a stand, whether or not you achieved the kind of relationship you're talking about. You were on the path and on the journey and that felt right to you. Was there any part of you that was afraid of giving up your partnership back then and like waking up one day and being like, I'm not able to actually find this kind of relationship and I can't believe I gave that up and that was better than nothing. I'm just wondering if there's any part of you that was afraid of moving forward into the unknown of whether or not this was going to happen for you?
Honestly, the only fear was about the impact on my daughter who, you know, when I turned 40, she would have been, I think, 8 years old, you know, maybe seven. So it was a huge concern about how she would be feeling about if I ended up having to leave the relationship, which I eventually needed to leave, how that would affect her. And at the same time, I had to make a decision to trust that I wanted for her to be impacted by me running after what was true for me. And I had to figure out how to trust that me creating a life based on running after the truth of my being would be the best choice I could make for her. So I think that was part of the process of 7 years for me of getting really, really, really clear about what was possible and what wasn't possible in that relationship.
So if you look at those 7 years, you and I were basically, I don't know, were we like set up maybe a week after you and your ex finally were like, okay, done. I don't know. It wasn't very long, right? So there wasn't like a big dating period for you. I got really fortunate to take you off the market.
You know, we have a joke that I was not even on the market and you came in and...
Got the presale. Even though you were in a partnership, how would you, when you're looking back, how would you describe how you, in your own internal process, prepared for the relationship that you were standing for? Like, what kind of internal work did you do? How were you holding this possibility? Was it like you were agonizing about trying to make sure that someday this kind of relationship would happen? Or was it more of an organic process that you were following during those 7 years?
Well, I think the theme that comes to mind is sorting through with as much diligence and care as I could bring to the process what was really possible between me and my ex.
And how did you do that?
A lot of work, couples work, individual work, therapy, ayahuasca ceremony, all kinds of different ways of exploring what truly was the gap between us. And the clarity came toward the end of that process when it became abundantly clear that we wanted different things. And when we both were clear that we wanted different things, then it was clearly over at that point. So it was relief to finally get to that clarity, but it took a long time to get there.
And for the people who are listening who are like, okay, well, when you finally gained that clarity, were you holding your intention for the next relationship loosely?
No, there was nothing loose about how I was holding it. I knew with absolute clarity what kind of relationship I wanted to have. I didn't have the 24 vows that you and I created together in my head as 24 vows, but I had very specific agreements and ways of relating that were going to be what I was willing to commit to. There was a benefit.
Did you write those down?
Yeah, I did. I created a kind of a mandala. I showed it to you at one point when we were in the very beginning of our dating. And it was just like a whole map of the different qualities of relating that I wanted to have in my next partnership.
For those who can't see the mandala, were there sections or like how would one go about, like if somebody was like, oh, that sounds very interesting to me, what advice would you give about this mandala that you created?
As I recall, there were two pages. The first one was how I conceptualized what I was leaving behind in my life, the kind of relating that I had been allowing in my life, I would say. Fear of judgment, fear of loss, being a bit of a doormat in relationships. There were two books I read at that time that were really meaningful. One of them was The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson. And the other one was, the title was No More Mr. Nice Guy. And I can't remember the name of the author, but I think I still have it on the bookshelf.
We can put it in the show notes.
And they both inspired me to really look at the way that I was willing to tolerate what I would now consider abusive behavior or not collaborative interactions. Mm-hmm. And it's been a journey for me. I think it's probably true for other people who might be listening right now to wake up to the ways that you go along to get along or avoid conflict in your life.
So I would imagine that since you were in partnership and reading these books, you would begin to start practicing being with your ex-partner in a new way. Like new parts of you are coming online. You're building the strength and the muscle of standing for yourself, of not being a doormat. And that, I would imagine, is part of the preparation that you personally were doing in order to be ready for a different kind of partnership.
Absolutely. For me, it was a lot of trauma healing and looking at patterns of self-protection from my childhood that mostly fell into the category of not feeling the pain of what was going on around me, because that was a really important protection that I learned how to cultivate as a child, of kind of enduring and getting through it and not letting negativity into my system. But there was a ton of numbing that was involved in that for me.
Yeah, and it probably took a bit, obviously, this process to wake up to it.
Definitely.
What a gift.
Absolutely. It was a necessary healing process that took many years for me to tackle it and dig in, and many nights of abject horror and vomiting and, you know, all the things that are part of a deep healing from childhood trauma, really, ultimately, is how I think about it now.
So you had this mandala of what you were leaving behind. It had to do with some of these things that we're talking about. And then you had another mandala that was what you were calling in.
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit about what was on that mandala? Like, was it specifically areas of what you want in a partner? It was areas of how to communicate. Tell us more about what that looked like.
Well, I think it mostly was themed around various aspects of collaboration and co-creating the kind of generative, challenging, growth-oriented partnership that really would have me feeling like someone has my back in the world, you know, and I have their back too. And I'm not alone in my experience.
How much do you feel like doing that mandala project contributed to then calling in the kind of partnership you were looking for?
Well, the mandala project was something I started about a year before the end of that relationship. And it just crystallized and put into words the feelings and the desires that I had for the partnership I wanted to have. So it's hard to say if the project itself triggered something different happening, but it was really helpful to concretize what I was going after and not just rely on intuition and, you know, a feeling about something.
If somebody said to you today, "Will, I really want to create the kind of partnership that I'm inspired to have in my life." If you were to give that person, based on your experience, three pieces of wisdom that you felt really specifically helped you become ready for this kind of partnership, what would you say to them?
The first piece of wisdom that I would share that I've earned from this process is to trust your inner guidance or wisdom that you can run after the kind of relationship that you want to create. That it's not worth it to sit around and wonder whether something's real or not. It's better to go ahead and get out in the world and try to find it or create it in the current partnership you have. I just think it's incredibly toxic to deny your inner voice and your need. So that's the first thing. And then I think the second thing that comes to mind is that the partner needs to be willing to play the game that you are committed to playing. And I say it that way because I think an awful lot of people suffer under the fantasy that they're going to find the perfect person who does it right or knows how to do it or whatever you want to say about that. But it's kind of like you want to find someone who can play pickleball with you. I'm using the metaphor of pickleball as a relationship metaphor, rather than somebody who's, you know, the number one pickleball player in the world. It's not going to be, first of all, I don't think it would be all that much fun to play with the number one pickleball player in the world because you get beat all day, every day. And it's probably not fun for them to have, you know, someone like you who's a beginner in this kind of way to play with every time.
Right.
So my advice is to question the fantasy that something's wrong with the candidate in front of you who could be your life partner. That's why we're committed to practices that are practices and they're not, you know, absolute rules that
we have to live to perfection.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a game of perfectionism. And then I think the third piece, which maybe is a little bit nuanced, but it has to do with what I was talking about taking care of each other and having each other's backs. And there's a very real pitfall that we need to be sober about, which is subtly not taking responsibility, or maybe not so subtly not taking responsibility for our own regulation in the context of having someone in your life who's as committed to their own regulation as they are to your regulation. So my point is that I think codependency is real. It's something that we need to be mindful of. We have to be self-responsible as we take responsibility for our partner. And if we don't, then we're putting too much burden on the person we're with.
Right. So the person who's like, okay, I'm ready to call in this kind of partnership, is looking through a particular lens. I think you're offering a particular lens for them to look through.
Right.
In relationship to even probably when they're meeting people, how they're being with the person and how that person is being with them, kind of like a gauge.
Exactly.
Would you say in terms of like, is this a possible candidate that could fulfill on this kind of partnership?
You're bringing up another really important piece, which is very aligned with my experience, which is that you need to have people in your life who are helping you vet the person that you might commit to, because people who love you, people who care about you, people who know your weaknesses and your blind spots can help you navigate that process of inquiry about whether the person you're dating or considering committing to has what it takes to do the things that you want to have in your life.
How did your men's group or your male friends, your community help you support your knowing of if our partnership was the correct one or not? Did they challenge you and support you there?
They did. They challenged and supported me, and they also, you know, had the advantage of knowing you. I think across the board, all of my close-in guy friends already had experienced you in different contexts, not just cocktail party kind of context, but also really deep personal work contexts where they had seen your capacities. And so the process of vetting with you was shorter and easier because many of my people had already vetted you in certain ways.
That helps.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. And thank you for sharing your journey and your experiences. I know how supportive it is to hear what you went through and the mandala and the different pieces of wisdom that you're bringing here for people who are wanting a different kind of partnership. Is there anything that you'd want to add before we close to the conversation?
Well, I'm looking forward to turning the tables and interviewing you in our next episode. So that'll be fun. But I just want to thank you for bringing such juicy questions and challenging me to really look deeply into this process. It's a beautiful, sacred process to get clear about who you are, what you want. You know, you might want the kind of siloed, non-interdependent relationship with your partner, and that's totally fine. We're not sitting here in judgment of people who want that, but our messaging is not for those people, really.
They're probably not listening to our podcast.
Probably not. So, you know, the process of growing up, getting imprinted with a certain set of strategies for keeping yourself safe, and then, you know, seeing the examples of how partnership is done between your parents or, you know, your single parent and who they date or whatever the circumstances are that you witness and sponge up as a little kid, and then getting out in the world and repeating those patterns, and then finding out, oh, wait, I got to decide what I want. I don't even know what the, going through that whole process is a beautiful, sacred process of aiming at truth and running after it. And so I just want to really encourage our listeners, go for it and don't hold back.
I love that so much. And it just reminds me too of, you know, some people don't really have access to people like you had in your friendships that were already having some level of secure functioning and interdependence happening. And if you don't have that, if you don't have those relational models in your life, then I would highly recommend that you seek them out. Meaning like, maybe you don't know the people, but there might be people like us who are sharing content and sharing about their lives and sharing ways that they do partnership that's really inspiring to you. There's definitely access to that, even if you don't have them around you in your community. So I just want to put a plug in for that, because I think more and more people are headed towards secure functioning relationships as we understand what that actually means and what that looks like and what it takes. But I think it's still pretty limited in terms of its commonality.
True.
In the world. But it exists.
it's still not common, that's for damn sure. But there are more and more people showing up and representing that and communicating about it. And, you know, we could also put more books in the show notes for people to check out as resources to kind of whet your appetite if you're into more of this material.
Sounds good. Well, thank you again. I love you so much. And I am so grateful for the stand that you took when you woke up when you were 40 and the work that you did to prepare for this partnership and the calling in of it so that we could be in this beautiful dance together. I'm so grateful. I love you so much.
Oh, I love you. Thank you for this conversation.
And thank you, listeners, for listening. We are so grateful for you and would love to receive any feedback that you have or any topics that you want to hear about. You can put them in the review on your favorite podcast app, or you can reach out to us at KristaVanderveer.com. And we'll talk with you next week. Take care. Thank you so much for joining us. If you found this content valuable, please follow the show and share it with your partner or other key collaborators. If the show sparked an interesting conversation based on these topics, we'd love to hear from you. Find us on Instagram at @ArtOfWePodcast.
And we'll see you next time when we explore what it means to be better together, like butter and toast, on The Art of We.